Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
My goodness, it's episode 228 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aidan Morgan.
Hello.
Hello. Can I just, there's a little behind the scenes thing I'd like to mention this week.
Ooh, this is for our Patreon. We should save this for our Patreon listeners, but okay.
If we had one. So, you know, when we record, of course, we record our separate streams using Audacity.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we do record via Zencastr, there are sometimes sync problems. So we use the Audacity stuff because it's easier to manipulate. What amazes me is we do a dual countdown, right? We count to three twice, and on the third three, we hit record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every single time we've ever done this, you sound completely out of sync with me.
Oh, really?
Because I'll say, like, one, and then when I say two, when I finish two, you say two.
Okay.
And so I start to learn to trust it. And there's a specific part. When I say that second three, there's a specific part of the word. I don't want to tell you because then you'll overthink it.
Right.
So do what you always do. But, like, it's somewhere between, like, the th and the r that I hit record. And when I get your file, we sync up perfectly every time.
Huh.
And I don't know how that's working, but it amazes me, like, every single week when I piece these together. That, like, I've had to shift it by, like, half a second sometimes. And but just because we sound so out of sync, I was just like, I'm going to trust it. I'm going to just go with this.
And it'll work.
Yeah. But, like, when we're recording, we don't sound out of sync to me. It's something with the counting. I don't know what it is, but it fucking bizarre. Works.
All right. I'll take it. By the way, if you hear cats fighting in the background, that's our cats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do find it funny. Whenever I'm on a video call, Watson always knows and wants to get up in my lap.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not asleep. When I'm on the podcast, he doesn't try it. Like, if it's just audio, he's like, I don't care, I'm not on camera. I don't know how he knows. Anyway. Before we start doing all the fun stuff, I thought, you know, a little universe update.
Ooh.
So, you know, throughout the pandemic, I've had, like, basically two friends, that will occasionally come over, like, you know, when it was winter, it was like once every 2 weeks, basically, and hang out in my garage because I put a heater in there. We'd leave the door open, turn on a fan, there'd be a heater and it wouldn't really actually do much of anything because the door's open and there's a fan. But it was, you know, it was too cold to sit actually on the patio. And this was kind of like 5 or 10 degrees warmer when it was like freezing outside. And we would kind of hang out, right? Like at a distance and do all that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't great, but it worked. And then it started getting a little warmer. And, you know, I mean, it really isn't right now. But it started getting a little warmer as we slide kind of into the spring thing. And so we've been sitting out in the patio, you know, again, without masks. You know, having a few drinks, but at a decent distance. We've all been vaccinated. We were still keeping this up, mostly because of me. Because, you know, spending like a year and a half completely alone other than that is a little weird.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And like I said, like the two-week thing did not go unnoticed. And I was like, yeah, let's see if we all die and then we'll keep going, you know. See if any of us get sick and then we can do it again. And when we moved to, like, we're all vaccinated and, like, we're sitting on the patio, we moved back to, like, once a week, which we usually did see each other, like, once or twice a week anyway before everything. So that felt kind of normal. So the other day, we met up and we went out to the music store and liquor store. Because now that I have people over, I need to restock the bar. And I quietly said to, like, one of my friends, because they're a married couple, I quietly mentioned to one of them that, you know, like, I might be up for let's just hang out in the house, like, without masks so we can watch TV. Part of this is they've been waiting to watch season 5 of Magicians for me.
Oh.
they felt like they wanted to watch it with me because, you know, and I'm like, I'll watch it again. That's totally cool. And we got back from places and we're standing around in the house wearing masks. And I'm just like, in my head, I'm just like, nope. And, you know, it was just kind of a little awkward, but not bad. And they left. And then last night, I was like, you want to hang out tonight? Like, we, you know, it's kind of nice that we can hang out in the patio. And we did. And then we're like, let's get food. It's a little too chilly in the patio. I was like, well, fuck it. Let's just watch Magicians. And so I actually had people in my house without masks for the first time in like a year and a half.
My God.
And it was surreal.
I was going to say, yeah, that is, I wouldn't know how to actually act around people
right
at this point.
Like, on the one hand, it was like normal because, you know, we were all just in the normal sitting on the couch type of configuration. And so there was like a level of just like, okay, this was just like what we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some level where your brain tries to fall back into old habits and just treat it as like, this is fine, this is normal. But then there's the rest of you that's like, but it isn't anymore, is it? You know?
Like, just 2 weeks ago, this was unthinkable and fraught with danger, and now...
Right, and like, technically, yeah. In my head, a lot of it still is.
Yeah.
Even though it kind of isn't.
Yeah. Well, it's like that Atlantic article said, you libs are addicted to your trauma.
I mean, there is that level of like... you can say it's addicted to trauma, but there is that like, there is that level, just like it's hard to shake.
It is hard to shake. Like you want
to. And also you don't want to shake at all. Like you don't want to just be like, well, fuck it, everything's normal, you know?
Yeah.
But like trying to adjust to a different level of normal is even harder because if it was just, well, now we can't do kind of anything and now we can, it's all completely normal, that would actually be easier.
Right.
Because knowing how much to scale up or down is the hard part.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and of course, this morning I saw that the variant in India that is like 60% more able to avoid the vaccination has hit the U.S. And I'm like, oh, good.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually jumped into a robot's body, and now it is running around just slicing people's heads off.
Right. Like.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. So it was a little weird last night.
I can imagine, but I'm glad. I'm feeling a vicarious thrill because it's still going to be like we're not getting vaccinated until like our second shot until at least mid to late June. So,
oof.
So we've still got a little while to wait.
Yeah,
but it'll be by the time my birthday rolls around, though, I will be like invincible and clad in Mortal Kombat style plot armor.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know that I'm going to let other people necessarily hang out in the house. It's like, these are just two people who I've been hanging out with in one form or another throughout the entire pandemic. Like, I know, like, you know, he works from home. She, like, has her own business where she has to see people, but she's extra, extra safe.
Right.
So, you know, it's like, I know I can desperately trust these two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's really funny. Like, I have friends, and that I do, I have friends. And... Yeah. And, you know, I would go into this, like, trusting people kind of implicitly. And, you know, my friend would say, oh, yeah, no, we're really, really safe. But, man, it's, you know, you have to watch out when you go to the gym. And I'm like, you're going to the gym? Like, what the fuck do you mean you're going to the gym? And I very quickly learned that most people just cannot be trusted.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it's like their version of safe is fine for them, and it's not mine. Like, I have a few friends who are, you know, doing the whole, like, oh, you know, taking, like, all the precautions of being really safe. Like, you know, we're only having, like, a small backyard party.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And I'm just like, these words do not mean what you think that they mean. So, again, like, it's going to be case by case. Like, there are other friends that I want to have over on the patio, say. Like, we're vaccinated. I more than trust sitting around the patio without a mask, say, outside. When it's nice out.
Right. Exactly.
You know, but like in the house, the funny thing for me at least is like, yes, the HVAC like goes every 15 minutes, but like there's a fan that would blow air like, you know, away from us type of thing. But when we're watching TV and sitting like right there on the couch, you turn it off.
Yeah.
Because you need to, because otherwise it's kind of cold and windy. It's more than just circulate air other times. But it does mean that, like, you're just, like, cutting circulation in, like, you know, two-thirds when you would actually want it.
Right.
So that's a good move. actually, just, like, repoint that fan a little bit. But, yes, it's just weird. But, you know, trying to slowly re-enter some form of actually a life. We'll see how that goes.
See if it's worth it. Yeah. You may get to the end of that and go, you know what? I liked it better when I was sitting at home in a mask with no one around.
Right. Like, I think that the cats actually were way more excited, too. Because they were just like, there were other people to bother. They're not sick of us yet. And they'll still put up with our bullshit.
Let's screw with them. Oh, God. Yeah.
So anyway, outside of that.
Excuse me. I'm all... My lungs are all sort of stuffed up today.
Oof.
Anyway, yeah, not fun. I can.
You saw a movie.
I did see a movie, but can I before we get into that fun stuff?
Please.
I want to do a quick review of Mrs. Renfro's Ghost Pepper Barbecue and Marinade Sauce.
Yes, please do.
Okay, well, I've decided to rate aspects on it out of a scale of 10. To start with, when I was in the store, and I don't go to stores much anymore because of the pandemic, so I feel a little rushed. So I grabbed it off the shelf, thinking I had picked up a bottle of a jar of Mrs. Renfro's Ghost Pepper Salsa.
Okay.
So from the point of view of something to dip my tortilla chips into, 2.5 out of 10.
Sure.
Because obviously it is. It is not built for that purpose. Right. But I thought, you know, I will roast some chicken thighs. I'll marinate some chicken thighs and roast those. So I tried that. When I dipped my finger in to start, I was like, okay, this is sufficiently hot. But when you roast with it, all of the heat disappears. Huh. The flavor is actually really nice and kind of mellow. It's a good barbecue sauce. But unless you just... dump it on, like, straight from the jar, you're not going to get any heat at all.
Interesting.
Yeah. I knew that cooking with it would, you know, cut the heat a bit, but I was surprised how much. So from that point of view, for cooking with it, I'm going to give it, like, a 6.5 out of 10. Good flavor, sure, but no heat. And I kind of wanted to have my face melted off.
Gotcha.
By ghost pepper heat. It also doesn't have that weird, sort of like ghost pepper flavor, which I think of as hot dirt, which...
Yeah, like I'm not a fan of, so...
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I mean, I'm sort of middling on the hot dirt flavor. So I was kind of glad it didn't have too much of that. But then like there was a good like 3/4 of the jar left, and I put it in the fridge, and I looked at it, and I thought... I'm putting it in the fridge because I can't bear to throw it away.
Right.
But the chances of me using this ever again are very close to zero.
Well, now it's a barbecue sauce, right?
Yeah.
I would save it if you haven't tossed it yet.
No, I have not.
Because if it has its heat when it's like not, you know, cooked with type of thing,
mm-hmm,
it'd be a potentially a good dip for some fries.
Mm. Okay, now we're talking.
Or, like, should you ever, like, just make, like, nuggets or something at home? Or get some nuggets. Like, things that you would dip into barbecue sauce, especially, like a cold barbecue sauce dip, it would be useful.
It would be. I mean, it's used because you can't, if you cook with it, it's going to be, like, a nice barbecue flavor, but it's not going to give you the heat that you...
Right. Like, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, there are other uses. Yeah, you just have to kind of lean into what its use actually might be.
Right, exactly. So, given my willingness to do that, I'll rate it as an 8 out of 10.
Okay. Yeah, no, so, 6, you know, when you're cooking with it, like, still good flavor, but potentially like an 8 as a dip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you hadn't given me those encouraging words, there's a good chance I would like, forget about it and then discover it 6 months later in the back of the fridge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I have accidentally done that. It's always a shame.
It is. But anyway, that's my brief but comprehensive review of Mrs. Very nice. Renfro's Ghost Pepper Barbecue Dip and Marinade.
So, yeah, I do want to move on, because I know that you saw a certain movie on Netflix.
I did. It was a certain movie that came out on Friday.
Yeah, that I have not seen because, well, I heard two things besides the director and that whole thing. I heard two things about it, and I was just like, you know what? I can't do it. I just can't do it.
Oh, I'm really curious. What are the... Okay, we're talking about Army of the Dead. What are the
we
two
are talking
things...
about Army of the Dead, the new Zack Snyder movie.
Right. So what are the two things you have heard about it that make you
okay.
go...
Okay. A, he actually paid Sean Spicer to show up at all.
Oh, I did not know about this.
Yeah, Sean Spicer's in the movie.
I guess he's
like a talking head on TV that gets like killed or like runs away and escapes or something like this.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, I've
But I was just like, you know what? Fuck you. Like...
Yeah.
First of all, if you need a newscaster in a movie, you go for some Purd. I'm just saying.
Yeah, actually, and that particular scene with Spicer is... I have things to say about it. But anyway, what is the other thing that you've singled out?
The fact that he apparently just needed some song that had the word zombie in it, so he just used the Cranberries, even though it makes zero sense.
Of course.
And I was just like, you know what? Fuck his Randian ass, okay? Well, no, I mean, you know he's been trying to make the Fountainhead for years.
Oh, I know. No, I mean...
And his current excuse is that, like, politically, I don't think it'll do well. I'm like, it won't do well because it's the fucking Fountainhead.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, his production company is, like, Stone Quarry Productions. And I mean, he's Snyder is very libertarian. It's very obvious. Jeez. Yeah, that's Sean Spicer scene. I didn't realize it was Spicer. I just thought it was somebody who looked like Spicer.
Yeah, apparently it actually was him.
Oh. Well, it's the funny thing is he's on a talk show, and there's a guest on who's like a talking head, and it's a black woman who I think is really meant to make you think of like Stacey Abrams or like a similar sort, like a left-leaning, large black woman. Right? That's the archetype. And... Who is complaining about the government using, or saying that the government is just using the zombie apocalypse to lock up, or you know dispose of its enemies who are left leaning, which is weird because we've got you know Democrats in right now, but whatever. It's kind of not wrong. There is kind of a corrupt sort of border guard at like the. Sort of at the edge of Las Vegas, who does sort of abuse his power or threatens to abuse his power. But it's like, that's not how these shows work. Like, you get right-wing people, like, frothing at the mouth, making baseless accusations.
Uh-huh.
That's not the left's game. Stop pretending that the left does what the right is actually doing.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's like his whole, like, he's a libertarian. I'm like, is he, though? Because all of his bullshit, I guess, much as he wants to kind of come out as a libertarian, so he's not, I don't know, like, shown for what he, it's just,
Yes. Yeah, it's exhausting. I knew going in, politically obnoxious, I knew that would be the deal.
Right.
I knew it would show up in some way. But yes, it's hard to know. And I knew that the zombie queue had to be coming. I didn't know going in, but I thought this is a Zack Snyder film about zombies. If he doesn't play the Cranberry zombie at some point, I will be disappointed because it is so Snyder-esque.
Right.
And he did not disappoint. There are people on Twitter going, it low-key rules. It low-key doesn't. It high key doesn't either.
Well, the other thing I've heard, okay, so like everyone's praising, you know, the whole Tig Notaro of it, but
right.
She was inserted digitally after the fact, right?
That's correct. It was Chris Delia, yeah.
Right. So yeah. All of the reactions to any of her lines aren't reactions to her at all.
Yeah, which is
her
kind
performance
of funny.
Has to be like that's the thing that people are like. Oh, it's such a great performance, and the way she integrates with the cast. I'm like, but she didn't.
There is one bit where they refer to Notaro's character as she. So I know they did some. Whether they dubbed in, like whether it was AOR,
right,
or whether they did like some pickup shots to cover it. But yeah, it is a little odd. But I will say this, that the like some of it is just obviously shot, like there's a lot of shots of Notaro with nobody else in the frame. So like, you know, a lot of her, like she's on the other side of a fence, or she's sort of, a lot of it is her up on the roof of a casino fixing a helicopter, that kind of thing. So I can see that it wasn't too tough in right. some ways, because they didn't have to do much like green screening her in with other people. But what they did do was really seamless. I mean, nice. if somebody hadn't said, like, I wouldn't have known, essentially. There is absolutely, right. like, so that's good. Like, you know, shout out to the technology that makes that possible. Also, she is literally the best thing about the movie.
Oh, I'm sure.
So glad they put her in, because she's basically playing a version of the character that she plays on Star Trek.
I am absolutely sure that she is the best thing there. It yeah. just kind of made me twitch a little bit when people were like praising, you know, like how well she works with the cast. But I'm like, but she did not work with the cast.
Yeah, I know.
Like, exactly. Yes, she should be given way more to do, and you know, she should be getting way more work than she gets.
Right.
And part of that is her own like schedule, but it's also the let's you know praise what she did, like the weird lift of working in that vacuum, I think, is far more interesting than mm-hmm. how she fake integrated with the cast.
Exactly.
And that's not getting any notice.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, it is. No, she does a great job. And that's probably actually one of the highlights, not just Notaro, but the way, but the seamlessness of Notaro's character, in with everything else. So yeah, but she herself did not work with, you know, Batista.
Yeah.
Speaking of Batista, there's an actor who I think should really be given more, or at least more things to do in his movies. I mean, his Drax is note perfect,
sure.
And he's just he brings in this, he brings a kind of, I don't know, like a kind of sadness and humanity to the role that most action stars probably couldn't. Manage?
I keep viewing him as, I remember the very early days with oh god, what the hell was that movie? Christ, Frank, what was the movie? Be Chill, that terrible, terrible sequel.
Oh, To Get Shorty, yeah.
Yeah, To Get Shorty. And the book was even worse than the movie, so hey.
Oh lord, okay.
Yeah, it was an experience. Like, that sure was a thing that was printed. but it had The Rock, and it was one of his very, very early roles. And he was the best thing in the film. And I kind of feel like Batista's there, right? Like, he's in that place where people are hiring him because of his physical look. And they haven't quite gotten down to the fact that, no, actually, he has a lot of weird skills
mm-hmm.
in this area, and that they should be taking advantage of them. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Yeah, I also did see the best fan casting ever, which is, you know, how often they put him in tiny little round glasses. And someone's like, he should just play Dr. Bunsen Honeydew. And dear God, it works.
Oh, God. Beaker. Yeah, that would be hilarious. I love that. Yeah, that's. I don't know why they do that. I mean, it works on his face, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it's that kind of comedic thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, he is. I mean, he does. Batista does quite a bit. With relatively little. He's just, you know, a guy who made it out of Vegas. He got a medal because he saved a politician, but he had to, you know, gank his wife, who was zombified, and sure. his daughter is upset with him. Not really for that reason, but that's only part of the reason.
There was something else he was in that it was like he was just shockingly, like, just solid, if that makes sense. Besides, like, Blade Runner, which again, and right. that's the thing, he's amazingly solid wherever you give him a role.
Yeah.
Trying to think of what that movie was. Hotel Artemis.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Like, it was a small role, realistically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But he was just this solid thing in that space that just kept working.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually thinking of watching it. It's on Netflix here now, so I was thinking of watching it again. Alan and I saw it in the movie theater, And my opinion was that it was certainly a good part of a movie that just suddenly ended.
I remember seeing it in the theater too, and I was just like, this is almost a movie?
I know. And then they're like, but we're done now.
Yeah, so. Like it really was like just it was a prequel for itself in a weird way.
Yeah, it was really funny. It felt like editing had done a bit of a number on it.
But yeah, I should go watch it again myself sometime. I don't know that I ever actually will remember to, because that always happens to me. Yeah. I'm like, I should watch this thing, and then I'm like, yeah, that never happened.
But I did not watch this thing. But yeah, so anyway, the plot such as it is for Army of the Dead. There's a zombie outbreak. It's confined mostly to Las Vegas, although there is some evidence in the movie that there are a few sort of like isolated pockets elsewhere. Oh my God, cat, shut up. Shh. Hold on.
Oh, Oscar? American Netflix does not have Hotel Artemis.
Oh, that's a shame. Okay, sorry.
Oscar is mad about this.
Yeah, Oscar. Oscar is upset that he thinks Hotel Artemis should be available on American Netflix.
Yeah. Oh, it's on Prime.
Oh, okay. There we go. Well, it's okay, Oscar. It's on Prime. Nope, that's not good enough.
But I have Prime. It's fine.
At any rate, I'm just going to see what I can do with him. Right. So Las Vegas has been walled off, and you know, by a bunch of shipping containers, and Batista's character, Scott Ward, the freaking worst movie character name of all time, is offered, you know, a chance to go in, grab $200 million from a safe, but he has 96 hours to do it because they're going to blow up Las Vegas with a nuclear bomb.
Sure.
So there's this fortune sitting there, and the mastermind says, you know, go assemble. He literally says, put together a team and meet me, you know, tomorrow. So there's the obligatory putting together the team sequence, obviously.
Right.
Jesus, Oscar, shut up. And then, I don't know, the movie's like the first third of the movie, like from the opening credit sequence, which is of course, you know, a Snyder specialty, to the like getting ready to go into Vegas bit. Like everything is sort of going more or less on track. But once they get into Vegas, like there are some good sort of zombie action sequences, but this is the point at which you realize that the zombies have like more, Oscar, quiet. The zombies have like more solid character motivations than the humans, essentially.
That's a problem.
Yeah, because there are, and here's where the Zack Snyder part really kicks in. The zombies are sort of sentient. They're shamblers, but they're also fast zombies, and they seem to have a society. But it's a pre-verbal, pre-literate, barbarian society of like there's a king and a queen and followers, and they sort of live in this sort of like exalted like plane, where their emotions and their motivations and actions are purer than the compromised, you know, humans with their like human emotions of like, course, you know, disappointment and greed and all that. So the weird thing is they're actually kind of the heroes of this movie, which is very Snyder-esque, in which, you know, he says, but what if the zombies were like actually like sort of like smelly Greek gods, essentially?
Right.
So
I sure.
So that's that. Hold on one sec. I have to plug in my headphones there.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
All right. It's one of those things of like, I really like Snyder's remake of Romero's Day of the Dead.
Sure.
Dawn of the Dead. The Mall one. I think that's the only Snyder thing I've ever really liked. So I was kind of like, oh, he's doing another zombie movie. Maybe that'd be cool. And then everyone I heard from it was just like, oh, no, it's a Snyder film. Like, just don't do it. And that's fair. Like, I really liked Michael Bay's first two movies.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's like Snyder, like a lot of these directors, like Bay, and I would say people like, you know, Joss Whedon, like they need to have their instincts like reined in just a bit.
Right.
And then, and like if they can do that, they can put out really good work. But if they're just let loose, then it's, then, well, the results are.
You know who I would add to that list, sadly?
Who's that?
Fincher.
Oh, no, that's completely true. There
to
are
a degree, though, because I'm like, Social Network, he came back. You know? Oh,
no, like, yeah, no, he has some, like, Fincher really puzzles me, because there's, he has some great stuff. We've talked about this. Like,
yeah.
Like Social Network. I'm also a huge fan of Zodiac. But yeah, if you don't stop him, he will produce some pretty bad stuff.
I think he's only as good as
the screenplay.
How much he, well, A, as the script, but also how much he respects the screenwriter.
Well, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, because then he won't go too far. He'll work with what he has. It's when he feels like, well, I should add to this, that it feels like he just keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
Just keeps going.
I rewatched his version of Girl with a Dragon Tattoo a little while ago.
Oh.
And I found I enjoyed it better than the first time I saw it. I think I really hated the opening credits so much when I saw it in the theater that I just kept, I spent, you know, over 2 hours in the theater going, I hate those credits. I hated them. and then the movie
was. It was like a reverse Watchmen.
Exactly. And then the movie was over and I'm like, oh, well. But then I watched again and I was like, okay, credits are annoying.
Right.
But the actual movie was a lot more. A lot, I could deal with a lot better. Although it also felt like they're leaning into Daniel Craig's vanity so much that it sort of detracted a bit as well.
Speaking of Daniel Craig, though, I got to say, with another Bond movie and all that eventually coming up, blah blah blah, I need to just suggest that everyone who likes Daniel Craig needs to go and watch Layer Cake.
You know, I have never seen Layer Cake, and just
okay.
2 days ago, I was thinking, I have to watch Layer Cake.
First of all, it's a gorgeous film. Mm-hmm. It is just a fantastic, weird little thriller crime movie. Like, if you like kind of, a lot of that kind of dirty crime movies, it is perfect.
Cool.
But I will always recommend it for, there is one scene, because he plays kind of this guy who isn't Bond, right? Like, it's, right. You know. There is one scene, literally, like, and like, it's, I think it's like two or three lines worth of delivery. That when they announced it was Bond, I was like, oh no, I get it. Because there's just one scene where, like, the Bond of it all comes out in him. And just, you know, this very soft guy has had enough. And it's just all of that weird, completely just emotionally shut down, just made of stone Bondness comes out.
Oh, okay.
Like, on his face, in physicality-wise, like, the way he holds himself changes for a second, and the way he just kind of spits these lines. And it was, in the movie, it's this shocking kind of moment that you're like, oh, you done pushed him. Just, like, right off a cliff. But looking back on it, it's just the, I can completely understand why people who cast him were just like, no, him. Him, huh. Right there. And so I kind of, I love showing it to people who are fans of his Bond for the, like, this is where he found it.
Nice.
But also, it's just a good movie by itself.
Yeah, no, I've, I mean, the director is Jonathan Glazer, whom I really like as well.
Yeah.
He did Birth and Under the Skin. So I just assumed that Layer Cake would be, like, a beautifully done film.
Yeah, and, I came on it by accident. Huh. I said, like, before Bond stuff, it was just, a friend was like, hey, I've heard, you know, this is, like, a fun thing. So we ended up, like, watching it.
You know,
like HBO or something, I think.
Do you know who else? Now that we were talking about movie actors who ended up as like action stars but have right. a great other range, I rewatched the movie Upgrade last week as well, and I don't know if you. I've recommended it to you. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I have not.
But there are.
I know you've recommended it. It's in my head. It's like, oh, it's this weird fun thing. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But there's the actor is Logan Marshall Green.
Yes.
Pops up. He's recognizable and you know, and a good actor, but he's also like amazingly, like amazingly good physical actor, because there are several scenes. Like he gets in an accident, he's paralyzed. I'm not giving away too much here.
Right.
And then he has an implant, this little thing in his spinal cord called stem, that ends up talking to him, and helps control his body for him. But there's a moment where he's being attacked. He's broken into somebody's house, and the guy's attacking him, and is going to get the better of him. And you can hear Stem's voice in his head saying, "You know, I need you. You know, Gray or Trace, whatever his name is. I need you to give me permission to act." And he says, "Okay, permission granted." And suddenly, his entire body just like writes itself, and he manages to keep his entire sort of self, his face completely still. And most of his body completely still, but his arms just come out and begin to basically fuck this guy up horribly. But he also manages to be like horrified at what his body is doing at the same time.
Right.
And he's like, that "Oh God, no, stop, jeez!" And it just keeps on going like that. And it is some of the most brilliant, sort of like horrific but comedic acting at the same time. Nice. Highly recommend it. So anyway,
yeah, it's one of those I should get around to eventually.
Yeah. You'll get a kick
like,
out of
like
it.
Like everything else. Yeah. There was. Oh, speaking of, I know you had stopped watching it, or you were considering. Last time we talked, you were like, maybe I should stop watching The Nevers because you know, fuck weed and it's not going anywhere.
Oh, I have not stopped. I did not stop watching.
I was going to say, I needed to know if you watched the finale.
I did.
Because of the apparent random guest character.
Uh huh. And I was actually not. Going to all I wanted to do when I saw it was email you, and I was like, "No, I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna wait to talk about this."
Yeah, no, I had it ruined like that night because I follow. Yeah, we're talking just for people who don't know. We're talking about Claudia Black, and I follow her on Twitter because you know, weirdly we have a lot of because I end up following a bunch of TV people,
right?
And so does she, and just yeah, there's like weird intersect. Not that like God knows we know each other or ever talked. But because of that, she was just like, "Look, I can talk about this now." And I was just like, "I wonder if Aiden stopped watching the show or not. I wonder if I'm gonna have to start watching the show next season." You know?
No, she pops up, and I have never seen a more perfect bit of casting than this.
I am so glad she still just gets work all over the place.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Not like headlining work, but. At least it's work.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And it was really funny because when I watched it, it took me a moment to twig because my image of Claudia Black is from Farscape.
Right. And she is older and blonde now, right?
She's actually gray-haired in this.
Okay.
So, I mean, and she's, you know, she's made to look like a grizzled veteran, right? So,
nice.
She's absolutely unglamorous. Still very that like absolutely iconic like Claudia Black face.
Sure.
She's a soldier. And in this future, people don't even like divulge their names. So she just is known as a stripe, which is a grunt basically.
Gotcha.
And she plays. Like the main character of The Nevers is Amalia True, played by Laura Donnelly. And I'm not sure why people thought this was a twist, like, because I thought it was actually, this is one of the few things that was pretty obvious about this show, was that Amalia True is obviously not a Victorian woman. She's clearly from another time or dimension. And she's like inhabited like True's body, because you at the very beginning of the show, you see her character jumping into like the river, into the Thames. I'm like, oh, okay, this person committed suicide, and gotcha. Somebody jumped into her body.
Right.
So I mean, when people were like, "Oh, I can't believe this twist," I'm like, this is one of the few clearly telegraphed bits of info about this show, which gave me a kick. But whatever. It was still a really fascinating piece of work because it was kind of like actually watching it. I just thought, oh, this is their epitaph one. Like this is the episode, like, you know, epitaph one on Dollhouse that actually refocuses everything and broadens the world and gives you a hint of where everything is going.
Well, again, like, my thing is just like the will we get more Claudia Black? Because,
well, I don't know, maybe.
Right, like that's my thing. It's like, you know, I'll wait for the next season. And it's like, if Claudia Black's suddenly a regular, I might go back and start watching it.
I doubt she won't be a regular. I mean, I know this much. She does not exist in the same time frame,
right,
as everything else. But I would be very surprised if we never saw her again.
Sure, but you know, that's fine. Oh well. But still, I was very excited that, you know, that happened.
Yeah. But it's one of the really amusing things is when somebody says she's an American, she's like, well, she goes Southwestern Canada, which I think must mean Vancouver.
Right.
But one thing that Canada doesn't have, like conceptually, uh-huh, is a South. We have an East and a West,
right,
and
you
a
have
North.
North, right. North is our South.
Right.
Essentially, in that sense.
Yeah, but Southern Canada is just regular Canada. Because most of us are all huddled right near the border, like the U.S. border, because it gets cold up north. And it's not where, and it's nowhere near.
Well, but now, but in the future.
In the future, right?
I don't know. I got nothing.
So having somebody mention like Southern Canada or the South, I'm like, oh yeah, that's. I guess there is a South. I guess it's just regular old Canada. Anyway, that was amusing. But yeah, that was a good episode, and it was certainly more interesting than the previous five, but still just kind of a frenetic mess of a show.
Right. Like I said, the only thing that was that made me go like, oh, I kind of want to watch that was Claudia Black.
Yeah.
So oh well. Anyway. Moving on, just because we're starting to run weird on time, just go through some normal stuff. Flash this season is still just weird.
Okay.
I don't know if you're watching it or not.
I'm still not. I've just watched the first episode of the season. And like I said, at one point I'm going to sit down and just binge them, but yeah.
That feels painful. Like, that thing is, like, it's just not a great, like, it's a fine, I guess, season overall, but it's showing its age.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, there's nothing that we've done that we kind of haven't done in some configuration before at this point.
Right.
And it's not that that's terrible or that the show is bad. It's just, it is exactly what it is. So that happened. Man of Steel. Superman and Lois is back?
Yes. I caught up with three episodes. Three. Yeah.
And I was like, I thought it was a great episode, but it also had what I think is probably the funniest moment in the entire show.
Do tell.
So, you know, after, like, Jordan breaks his brother's hand and all this, you know, Clark and Lois are hanging out. She's like, it's a bad time to tell you that, like, I almost got killed today. And she has this whole thing. And then at the end, she's like, and she has superpowers. And he just deflates and, like, slumps over. Like, I cannot take any more of this today. It was just so perfect physically that, like, you could just feel, you know, that, like, it's the exaggeration of like, please stop, you're killing me. And it was perfect. You know, and then she was like, well, he had this gun. He's like, what was a journalist doing with this ray gun? Like, he wasn't a journalist. I just loved also that his first instinct wasn't, like, well, obviously he wasn't a journalist. He was like, wait, but that doesn't. And there's just like, there's just so much going on that he's like, I gotta catch up.
Go
back and just watch, like, that scene, and it's fucking priceless.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Oh, that'll yes, I will. I'm really enjoying this show.
Yeah.
Like, I really like the pilot. I'm like, okay, we're off to a good start. But it's a more sort of thoughtful, and like just beat by beat, like, kick-ass show than I thought it would be.
Yeah, like I don't think it was at all what any of us were expecting.
No.
But, and again, like, it's partially because, you know, it would have been what the Supergirl show is if Supergirl hadn't happened.
Right.
But again, it did, so they had to find a new direction, and I kind of love this direction.
Yes, me too. Hard agree. Yeah, there.
Yeah, I also, the constant, like, doing Superman stuff is never the hardest part. Because he's fucking Superman.
Right. Yeah. And I have to say there's that scene. And once again, another way that showing that this show and its stable of writers get Superman more than like big screen current Superman possibly will. The scene in which he comes to defend Tag or whatever his name is.
Yes, Tag.
The kid. And one soldier just shoots him with kryptonite darts. And you can see he's like, it hurts. And then it's like, I've got to get these out of me. And then just this like insane rage that he's like, they have kryptonite darts. They thought they could do this to me. Like, and that's that, like, and at that moment, it's like, okay, that's my position. Like all his father-in-law's like, you know, talk about, you know, how we worry about Superman. It's like, okay, he's just another potential threat that they have contingency for at any point.
Right. But you also see that this is why. And for me, it was the cap to that. It wasn't so much the, like, see his anger and then see him just kind of shut it down.
It's the, yeah.
But it's the later when he's like, you break that trust. It's harder to rebuild it. I deal with it every time I use my powers. And the fact that he's just consciously, like, afraid of it. And that's what makes him who he is.
Exactly. And he's
like if they hadn't followed that up. You know?
Yeah, no, that's exactly that. That's what makes that work. When he says, "You don't think I feel like rage? You don't think I get angry?" It's like I have to deal with that, and it's like, that was some of the smartest like Superman writing I've seen in a long time.
The old Justice League Unlimited cartoon has a moment where, you know, I'm not a big fan of using Darkseid for big physical punching battles, but there is one at the end of that show. That is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Superman starts fighting with Darkseid, he starts punching him, and Darkseid kind of starts laughing. Superman's like, you don't get it. This, like, I can let loose. Normally, I have to deal with feeling like the entire world is made of cardboard. And you just get that hint of, like, oh my god, like, this is a man who literally everything he does, he has to be so careful.
Mm-hmm.
Not to protect a secret identity, but just because he could do so much harm if he is not always conscious of what he is doing.
Right.
And it was just like, it just brings that home very quietly and quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it when they get to do that.
Agreed. So. Ah. No, that was wonderful. And I was like, okay, I'm glad. I was like, I'm glad I caught up on Superman. And Lois.
Yeah.
Also, I like the fact that they're finally bringing the Morgan Edge and the General Luther parts of the story together.
Right.
Because that was one of the things I was most I thought was weird from just a basic pacing standpoint. It was like, okay, which thread are we following? And I'm like, oh, okay, everybody's working towards the same end. I get it.
Yeah, in like weird ways that we can't quite pull the threads for yet.
Yeah, exactly.
But also there was a Legends episode.
Yes, there was. Oh my god, I love this one so much.
Yeah, that was a whole bag of things, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. I mean the ridiculousness of I knew that the alien would end up in the singing competition. I'm like, okay, that's a given. But the ridiculousness of the whole sort of process by which he's like, I've come to slay a king, and then, you know, in order to prevent that, they have to like convince him that to join the singing competition. And I'm just like, god damn, that is.
And I love their weird attention to detail, like, you know, the whatever his name was, who was the king. With his s'mores head. Yeah. And then he had a backup one that was burnt.
I know.
Like, why, dude? Why?
That was also good. I'd actually like
he to had know no backup playing. Clothes, mind you.
No backup clothes, but he had, well, because remember in the beginning of the episode, early in the episode, Rory burns his
s'more.
So the backup one was the one. So he was wearing for most of the episode. He had the backup one on, and then he had to go put on the burnt one.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, Yeah, I but my I guess I don't know, like what scene I love the most. There's the one where, you know, the alien like downloads all the world's best boy band style vocalists, and does his gender flipped empowerment anthem, which just I got a huge kick out of. Yeah. Or whether it's Zari singing Buzzcocks, which was just inspired.
Yes.
I was like, what a great payoff to like the Buzzcocks from the beginning. Also, they said the word Buzzcocks.
They kept saying the word Buzzcocks.
It's like either they know what that means and they're just like, yeah, that's the name of the band, or whatever. But yeah, that was pretty damn good.
I also, you know, like the alien reveal came as no surprise to me, right? Like you could feel that coming a mile away.
Yes.
And I think like Men in Black ruined that joke forever, right?
Yeah.
But Legends found a way to make it funnier. Yep. It's like, thank you, Mick Rory. Just fuck it. They are also telegraphing his leaving really well.
And pretty hard too. I mean, they're really
Well, because after all this that he has stayed for, like, and given that he stayed last season when it wouldn't make sense for him to, they really have to find a way to justify it.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, and they even point out, yeah, you're the last original sort of, like, member of the cast at this point.
Currently on the ship, because we still have to go and get,
we still have to go and get Sarah. But, I mean, you can't have the show. I think you can't really have the show. I mean, you could, but it would be very odd to, like, lose Sarah Lance.
Although they are kind of making a case for it right now.
I guess so.
Yeah. I think they are kind of hedging their bets. Like, if they keep going, like, she might leave too.
Yeeks.
I don't know. I mean, again, I hope not. But there's a chance of it.
Yeah. Also, Gary eating all the Ava clones.
Yeah.
Why did you have to taste so delicious? Or taste so good?
I just fucking Gary. The show is just a goddamn delight.
It really is. And I mean, just the fact that they can pull out like a completely bonkers like episode like this at this point in its run. I don't know.
Yeah, they've never slowed down.
Never slowed down. And I mean that, I mean, I have a feeling this one might be sort of one of those sort of like crazy top 10 sort of episodes of the show.
I don't know. I mean, it'd be nice, but I feel like they have more in them.
Yeah. No, I think
so. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like it's going to get way weirder soon.
Oh God. Yes.
I've
watched the season trailer. It gets weirder. I know that much.
Yeah. Like I know that the next episode, isn't really going to have, I think, any Sarah in it.
Oh, okay, sure.
Because she is directing the episode after it.
Ah, okay.
But of course, the next episode is Bay of Squids.
I can just guess.
Yeah, I just, you know.
Okay, I mean, my guesses are usually not quite right for this show, but I can still guess. What am I thinking of here? How are we? So we saw that there was a Supergirl.
Yeah, that's tonight.
Saw.
And then they're taking a week off, by the way.
Okay.
Because there's one tonight, and then the fifth episode, The Satanist's Apprentice, again, directed by Katie Lott, is on the 6th.
Okay. Well, bear that in mind. What else? I almost forgot before. I mean, we're hitting the hour mark hard, but there is, of course, Aiden's Art House Corner.
Oh, yes, please. Let's close out with that.
Yes. This week on Aiden's Art House Corner, the Criterion Channel has a special on the films of Mitchell Leisner, and I'm not even sure that's how you pronounce his last name. He's a pre-code and early, you know, Hays Code era director who has done some, like, classic films, but I think is forgotten sort of in the annals of directors. Right. So I watched Death Takes a Holiday from 1934 and Murder at the Vanities from right around the same time.
Death Takes a Holiday, of course, is
Yeah, is that that is a classic.
Yes.
I mean, and it's a highly, I mean, it's an interesting film, extremely stylized and quite and rather parodied to death by Family
yeah, well.
Guy. But there you go. Murder at the Vanities. My God. You forget that pre-code Hollywood could just got away with a lot of stuff. and seriously, this movie, parts of it just make a lot of modern, like 21st century films feel prudish by comparison. I mean, a lot of it is just, and it's a testament, it's like an hour and a half. It packs in like a, you know, a romance and a murder mystery, but a lot of it is just there. That's just drapery, like that hangs off the musical numbers, like
right.
Which are, I mean, and this is just often an excuse to film some kick-ass musical numbers, and the bevy of chorus girls. It's like, how do you get, like they basically said, how do you make people like completely naked, but not quite completely naked? And then they figured it out and they made a movie around it. It is remarkable. Also, the numbers are really, really good, including nice. One called Sweet Marijuana.
All right.
Where they basically...
That wasn't a problem anywhere until the 50s.
No, exactly. This is the 30s. This is pre-code. And it's just this this song, just this, it's a pan to the benefits of marijuana, from like soothing your soul to like getting some good sleep. and it's delightful. But at the same time, like you've got stuff like I think it's Rhapsody in Ebony.
Okay.
Which is, you know, something that probably would not be produced today. But is one of the like the most fascinating numbers in the whole thing. The setup is that it's sort of like done as a classical orchestra, and the conductor is sort of, you know, going at it, but every time he turns around, a jazz band pops up from behind the string players and begins to like riff on the classical, and then he like pops, then he turns around and the players disappear. And as it goes on, like they begin to take over more and more, till finally he's forced off, and you get this sort of whole jazz number. A lot of actual black musicians and actors at this point. You don't see them anywhere else in the show, but you see them here.
Okay.
And then one of the main characters comes out and sings a song about the women going to church singing the dirty hosannas. It's a little bit racist, but.
But at least there's
no minstrelsy. That's one thing. Like they actually had, yeah. So that's, you know, small mercies. And then at the very end, the conductor comes out with a machine gun and kills everybody because he's so angry. Which
sure,
is
sure. Why not?
Which is really, which is semiotically weird. But it's still, but it's also the point in the movie where the singer of the song. Is actually shot with a handgun, you know, during the chaos.
Gotcha.
So for it's part of the murder mystery. But yeah, it is. It is a remarkable film, and the humor in it, I'll just give you an example. The humor in it is of this stripe. It cuts to like a police station, and one of the detectives is sitting with his nose in a book, and the book is How to Be a Detective.
Nice.
So, this is the level of humor we're operating on, and I loved it.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
And of course the lead detective is like just nothing but like a completely useless horn dog whoever crosses his field of view is either a suspect or someone to be leered at. And
sure.
And he looks remarkably like Albert Finney. I don't know who plays him.
Huh.
But anyway, that's that. So yeah, Murder at the Vanities. Pick of the
Murder
week.
Murder at the Vanities. All right. Well, on that note, we will play some music.
All right, let's do it.
Woo!
Woo, woo, woo!
Music!
Music!